This is Power Hour. A production of IrishSportsDaily.com. Your number one source for year-round Fighting Irish recruiting news and more. Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription. And now, the host of Power Hour, Mike Frank.
All right, welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank, and we've got my co-host here in Matt Freeman. Jamie Uyama is not able to join us today because he's got a plumbing problem.
Imagine that. What an excuse.
I didn't even want to ask, you know what I mean? But let's just say he was in a state of panic and decided that he could not attend Power Hour today because he was having problems with his shower and his toilet. And
it's wet in the Uyama household today.
I don't even want to know what's going on over there. All right, folks. Well, first we want to start, but first of all, let everybody know right now we're running a great special, our spring special. This will only last a very short period of time, probably less than a week. Right now, you can join. If you're not a member of IrishSportsDaily.com or you're a former premium customer, you can sign up for, it's $20, $19.99 between now and August 1st. So all our spring coverage, all of recruiting in May and June and July, all that stuff for just $20. So basically, it's now $19.99 from now until August 1st. So I just wanted to let you know if you are thinking about jumping on to check out what IrishSportsDaily.com is all about. Great time to sign up right now, and there's certainly a lot of exciting stuff going on. Also, if you have any questions for the staff, feel free to stop by the Huddle, which is our free message board on IrishSportsDaily.com. You go to the front page there, click on the forums, and click on the Huddle, and you can log in there and ask us whatever questions you have. And also, if you enjoy the show, we appreciate you taking the time to share it. You know, if you have a Twitter account, share the show. You can go to the front page of Irish Sports Daily and click on the link where we publish the show and share it, if you would. There's a little button down there at the bottom that makes it real easy for you. You can click on to share on Facebook or Twitter, and we'd greatly appreciate that because we're looking for as many listeners as we can get. Also, if you're interested in advertising with Irish Sports Daily's podcast and Power Hour, you can contact me at MikeFrank18@SBCGlobal.net. You can email me there at MikeFrank18@SBCGlobal.net. And you can ask any questions you want. We can get you details on downloads and that type of stuff. And I think our pricing's very reasonable, and I think you'll be excited about it. You can definitely reach a lot of people from all across the country and really outside the country too. All right, Matt. Well, spring football starts this week. We expect a Brian Kelly press conference tomorrow at noon. Waiting to hear the actual facts on that, whether or not it's actually happened, but I assume it is. At least that's what Michael Birch told us, that we'd have a thing, press conference tomorrow at noon. So, and then Wednesday morning will be the very first practice of spring. And then we heard Friday they will also practice before they take a week off for spring break. So that's the schedule. And, Matt, I'm really excited about this because I think this is going to be the most exciting spring we've ever had to cover. There's so many different kind of new things and so many unknowns heading into it that I'm just really excited about getting to see what all this means.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking this morning just what I was kind of going to watch during the first practice, and I had about 15 things I wanted to see. So it'll be kind of interesting just to see how several things develop just on both sides of the ball and even special teams with Polian coming in. So, I mean, there's not going to be a lack of things to talk about.
Well, there's just so many different things. You get to watch coaching style and what are they doing differently than they've done before and how are they practicing differently. And then you also got a whole bunch of new players that are going to be joining the mix. And so that's going to be really exciting to see. I'm always most intrigued by coaching style and then what are they doing differently. And that's going to be some things that I'm going to focus on pretty heavily in these opportunities to actually watch. And it sounds like we're going to get a pretty good opportunity. You know, I think we'll have a good number of open practices. And, it, you know, I think it's going to be at least three full practices. So we ought to be able to learn quite a bit about this team and the talent that's on hand. Well, let's start with quarterback. You know, there's only two guys, Brandon Wimbush and Ian Book. And to be honest, I kind of like that because it gives both of them a tremendous amount of work. You don't have to kind of give that third guy his little token reps. And you really get a good chance of Brandon Wimbush getting an understanding of the offense, but also getting Ian Book those much-needed reps, because if Wimbush goes down, Book's your guy. He's got to be the guy going in. And so I kind of like them only having two because it really gives both of them a lot of reps to get prepared.
And I think both of them are going to be somewhat comfortable in their role, too. I mean, it's kind of already established that Wimbush is QB1 and then obviously Book's the backup. So I don't think there's going to be too much pressure either way on trying to do too much or lose a job, as Kaiser kind of stated at the combine. So I think that's good for both of them. And then, I mean, when I was making that list of things I wanted to watch, I mean, Wimbush was number 6. So, I mean, that's kind of... Yeah. Normally it'd be number 1, but I mean that's kind of the way the spring's going to be set up, is just there's so many different things, and I mean I think, like I said, both of them are going to be comfortable just in the role that they're going to be in, and I mean it's more of watching Tommy Rees kind of take the reins of the position as well.
Well, Ian's also been around when there was like a quarterback change, you know, when Malik gets hurt and all of a sudden Kaiser's thrown in. So that will tell him, look, man, I gotta prepare. No, I'm talking about Ian Book. You know, he's gotta prepare that he may be the guy that has to come in. So a lot of guys, if they go in as a backup, you know, you're doing your stuff, you're learning and things like that. But we've seen quarterbacks go down, and just knowing that, hey, I'm one play away from getting in here, I need to take this seriously, I think is a really good thing. So. And you mentioned, you know, they will know their roles. They'll know that, hey, Wimbush is going to be the guy, but I got to make sure that I'm ready to go. And there won't be any back and forth. Brandon won't have a problem trying to help Ian.
Yeah.
You know, where if there's a battle and a quarterback, maybe there's not as much give and take. So to me, I like the way it's set up. Now, at running back, I can't wait to watch this battle. I think this is going to be really outstanding because I really think they have four running backs who can carry the mail. I love all four of these guys, and this is going to be a battle. And you know, if you're Autry Denson right now, you got to be smiling because you know that these are four hungry guys. They're four guys who can do the job, and this is, you know, they're going to push each other, which should make all four of them much better players.
Yeah, I mean it's. And all four of them are different backs, too. So, I mean, that's kind of how full Autry Denson's cupboard is right now. Is he doesn't have two of the same guys. So, I think kind of just the way the offense wants to go is kind of what you'll see at the running back position. And I think that'll probably end up leading to Josh Adams just because he's probably the most complete back at this point. But, I mean, Dexter obviously is electric with the ball in his hands. And then, obviously, we've already talked about Tony Jones on a couple podcasts. So, it'll be just real interesting to see how everything fits together.
I'm excited because I think that Dexter and Tony Jones probably have more talent than Josh Adams does. Adams has the experience, but you know, we went into this last year saying, well, it's going to be Fulston because he has the experience, but in the end it was Josh Adams. So to me, that tells me that, hey, you know, Dexter has a chance to be the starter, and so does Tony Jones Jr. You know, Dexter probably needs to work on his hands a little bit, maybe blitz pick up just a little bit, but I think once those guys, you know, kind of fine-tune those things, you know, it's going to be a tough situation. You mentioned they're all different backs, and, you know, Tony's more kind of a power guy, but he's also pretty shifty inside runner. Got pretty good burst. You know, Dexter's probably more of the flashback. And then Josh Adams more of kind of a slasher. You know, I want to see Josh Adams run with more power like he did as a freshman.
I just want to see Josh Adams healthy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you saw it at the end of last year where he started to break off those big runs because he started to get healthy. I mean, the Virginia Tech run was – a heck of a run. And then obviously at USC, the what second play of the game, first play of the game, I mean, he got caught by Adoree, but I mean, that's Adoree Jackson. So, that burst was back from him.
Yeah. Well, and I think you want to see the hard charging, hard running style that he had. You know, he's a big hoss. He should be breaking tackles, you know, and we weren't seeing that. He was going down on first contact, and you can't be an effective back by doing that. You got to pick up the extra 2-3 yards that takes you from being an average back to a very good one. Having said all that, I really like C.J. Holmes, man. This kid is a very, very good talent, and it'll be interesting. Do you think he'll stick at running back, or do you think maybe we'll see him wide out a little bit?
I mean, that's going to be an interesting thing, and I don't think we're going to get that answer until the fall. Because, I mean, like we talked about, there's three backs that have kind of already been through a season, and I think they can obviously get by with those three. But obviously, CJ brings that playmaking ability. So I think it kind of depends more on if they feel comfortable with CJ Sanders doing those jet sweeps and stuff like that, because I think that would be more of CJ Holmes' role year one versus kind of being a every down back, so to speak.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if he's the second guy opposite CJ Sanders on kickoffs, you know, whether he gets involved in the punt return type of situation. So I have a feeling Holmes will play in the end. Yeah. It's just a matter of how much and where. So,
I actually really liked him in the slot because what we saw, Irish Invasion, I mean, he had the best catch there, and then he was just consistently getting open on when he was working out of the receiver position. So, I mean, I think that may be something to keep an eye on down the line just because Notre Dame's been searching for production from the slot. So,
and that might not be a bad thing for him to kind of learn that position. It gives him a lot of position flexibility, you know, even at the next level. Allows him to, you know, it certainly worked out well for Theo Riddick, you know, learning a little bit at wide receiver and then coming in and being a running back. So I'm just excited to see him because I think he's a real explosive player. Great hands. Love his compete level. He's a guy that really plays hard and works hard. So I like a lot of what I see from him. To me, Matt, I think the most important thing that I'm going to be looking for in the running game is what changes. You know, if they're when we watch team in 11-on-11, are they going to go tempo like they keep talking about? And look, if you're going to do it, you need to do it now. You need to get people used to it. And so, you know, right out of the gate, I'm going to be interested to see whether they go tempo in 11-on-11. And I think in order to go tempo 11-on-11 a lot, you need to go faster in practice. You got to get your team used to moving fast, thinking fast. And so I think, you know, in between reps and running from station to station, all those things need to be maybe ramped up and kicked in the butt a little bit and more sense of urgency. Because it's got to be a mindset throughout all of practice. So to me, I'm excited to see whether that has changed.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about some of the changes that could be made in practice. And, I mean, with the new staff, you never know what could happen. But, I mean, it's still Kelly calling the shots in terms of what they do on that itinerary. So
yeah. I just hope that we see that because if we do, that will give me the indication that Kelly has given Chip Long the green light and saying, okay, well, we're going to do some of these things that you want to do. If it's the same old crap again, well, then I'm not sure that we'll see the same thing. So or I'm not sure that we'll see anything different than what we saw before. At wide receiver, this is going to be interesting because, I mean, I know everybody thinks EQ St. Brown is the guy, and there's no question he's certainly the leading candidate to be the number one receiver. But I also think he could do a better job and be more consistent. So that jump right now, we want to see a big jump in him in consistency with his hands, effort, all those types of things. So I want to see that. But then again, after that, it's who is number two? Is it Stefferson? Is Stefferson going to be fully in? You know, are his issues and off-the-field stuff, is that all behind him at this point? Or is any of that linger? And then, you know, besides Stefferson, who else is out there that's going to step up? Is it Claypool? Is it, you know, Miles Boykin? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. And there really isn't a lot of receivers on the roster right now that that can be that guy. You know, it'll be. It sounds like McIntosh is going to stay at wide receiver, so he'll certainly be in the mix as well. But there's just not a lot of guys. You've got McKinley, I guess, and he'll get, you know, some reps, and we'll see whether he's willing and able to make that big jump from, you know, freshman year to sophomore year, when it's like, okay, I knew last year I was redshirting. Now's my time because I have receivers coming in. So
yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to how much control Chip Long has, because if you're going to be running some of those RPOs, then a guy like Stefferson, you could really see a jump in his game, just because he's a guy that's already going to get behind the defense. But if you're holding on that play action that much longer, then, I mean, he could be in for some big plays. I know that's kind of a more long-term thing versus just in the spring, but I think Javon McKinley finally getting to see him in a bigger role, we'll finally see how much game, I guess, he has, because I know he struggled a little bit at times last fall camp, but, I mean, that's a freshman. So, and then, obviously, you said Claypool and Boykin. I think both of those are still very intriguing prospects, just because I don't think you've seen enough out of Boykin to say, like, he's this type of kid. Because
yeah,
he kind of played pretty good at the end of last year, and then obviously Claypool has all the athletic talent in the world. So just him growing into the position and learning the position, I think will take him to the next step.
It's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out, because we know EQ is going to be one, and if they put Stefferson at one slot, then, you know, then you're looking at a slot receiver at that point, and where does he go? If EQ isn't the guy, or if EQ is the guy and Stefferson isn't, you're going to have two big guys, you know, on the outside, which is good. One guy will probably get single coverage in a boundary situation. Do you want that guy to be EQ? Do you want that guy to be Claypool or Miles Boykin? And then the other position where it's been kind of a disappointment has been the slot position. You know, C.J. Sanders hasn't quite stepped up. Matt Fink, you know, started playing some last year because I think they were disappointed in the production of C.J. Sanders. And, you know, he's a walk-on. He showed his, you know, versatility, yeah, and his quickness, and he's a good player. There's no question. But he is a walk-on. You know, does Deion McIntosh suddenly show up? Or is it a situation where we'll see more two wide receivers, two tight end sets, because we start seeing some tight ends move into it? We'll talk tight end next, but I really think this is a critical year for guys like C.J. Sanders, Fink, and Deion McIntosh. If they're going to make plays and want to be part of the offense this spring, they're going to have to show it.
Yeah, I mean, you said it best. I mean, Chris Fink just kind of took over the position just because C.J. Sanders was that inconsistent. So, mm-hmm. I mean, like you said, I mean, Fink's not a bad player, but technically he probably shouldn't be playing, but I mean, he's produced, so yeah, it's hard not to argue, because I mean, we saw it in practice the last 2 years. The kid's almost unguardable in practice.
Yep.
But I mean, does a CJ Holmes emerge there or whatnot too, like we were talking about? So also the other intriguing thing is, if they are trying to go three wide receivers, what if you have St. Brown, Claypool on the outside, and then where if you stick Alizé Jones in the middle just to hit the seam? I mean, those are, it's unconventional, three big guys, but I mean, all three of them have extreme athleticism and stuff, so it could pose a matchup problem. I know it's not ideal, but I mean, that's something they could look at.
That was my next answer. You were headed right where I was headed, because you talk tight end right now, and you have Alizé Jones, and if people remember in the spring, they were putting him a lot in that slot, mm-hmm. and they were using him as a blocker a lot of times to go stone any sort of safety or corner for their middle screen type stuff. You know, when they just throw a quick pass out and they want somebody to block, he was very effective in that role before, obviously, he ran into some academic issues. But it would not surprise me to see Alizé Jones being that guy, playing more of a slot role and then being two tight ends. Now, that will happen if somebody else steps up at tight end, and that's what we don't know. Is Durham Smythe, you know, ready and willing to be a great inline blocker and somebody worthy of keeping on the field? Is Nick Wisher, you know, going to continue to improve as a blocker and maybe somehow show up as a receiver? Or do you just put Brock Wright in there, who is a true freshman? You know, while he's, you know, only a true freshman, he is 250 pounds already. He'll have time in the system to develop his body a little bit, maybe become that effective blocker, and, you know, learn the system, learn what to do, so in the fall camp he's ready to go. I don't know, you know, but I like that idea of putting Alize Jones in that kind of slot position or maybe even an H-back role and having another strong inside line or inside tight end, you know, matched up. That way you can show strength in the run, which gets your, you know, safeties a little bit worried about what's going to happen there, but also have a dynamic player like Alize Jones. So I really think we know Alize is going to be a very effective player, and I think we'll see him really blossom this year. But how much of that two tight end set, I think, really depends on what kind of production they can get out of Smythe, Wisher, Luatua, and Brock Wright.
Yeah, I mean, I agree for the most part. I think for Alize, I mean, he's done all the right things in the last year. I mean, every practice we saw in fall camp, he was staying after the work. And then, obviously, he supported his teammates through the year, supported his head coach, and then has been just saying all the right things on social media and whatnot. But, I mean, last spring when we saw him, he was dropping a lot of passes too. Yeah. So, I mean, he needs to show up consistently making plays on the field. I did like his blocking, like you said. He was able to get out to that cornerback or the safety and make the block. So I don't think he's going to lose that. And then in terms of the other tight end, it's a big spring for Nick Weicher because, yeah. I mean, he really improved last year. He's still not the greatest inline blocker, but he definitely took big jumps last year. And, I mean, if he has a good spring, he could pass Smythe. So,
yeah.
I mean, that problem could be solved at the end of spring ball.
Well, that's going to be interesting because, it you know, do those young guys push the older guys? And you know, Luatua has the base and the lower body to be a dominating blocker, but for whatever reason, just never really materialized last year. You know, we knew he was going to go to BYU, transfer to BYU, decided to stick around, and just never quite got into that mix. And we've seen he can be an effective blocker.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they were using him more as an H-back role and sending him in motion to be a blocker, and he showed at times he could be effective that way. But those three older guys, you know, the time is now. If they don't step up, it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I mean, Luatua was great in that H-back role against LSU a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's kind of what he's more made for versus kind of in line all the time and whatnot. But, I mean, he's a guy to watch. And then I just don't think Brock Wright will be there this spring to where you can make a difference just because he's going to be going from blocking high school kids to
– sure. And head swimming.
Yeah.
You know, and head swimming. So – it's not an easy situation for a freshman tight end to come in and say, okay, by the way, you know, now you got to block Dalen Hayes. Yeah. You know, that's just not going to
every play.
Yeah, exactly. So
then you got to block Khalid.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to offensive line. And this is one area where I'm hoping to see instant improvement in regards to strength and conditioning. You know, this is one area where I think we should see instant improvement. We should see a stronger group. We should see a bigger, more cut, more physically imposing group. But the other thing that I think we need to see more than anything is a nastiness that I just don't think we've seen. And I really hope we start to see that this spring.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Bayless and Ballou and Jones and the strength and conditioning have kind of changed the mentality just because all the kids are talking about it on social media and you never saw that before. So I think that'll translate to the line. Plus, I mean, you get some, if Tommy Kramer ends up starting, I mean, that's another nasty player in high school that hopefully will translate to the field. And I think that attitude will kind of go in line with what Quentin and obviously McGlinchey do. So I think you could see that instant improvement. And then, I mean, like you were talking about from a physical standpoint, I know one player, his neck size grew 1 inch in a month. So there's results there. So it's time to see if those results can actually pay off on the field.
Well, that's going to be interesting because I think that this is one area where they can make a lot of improvement. And I think that inherently a guy like Quentin Nelson is a tough, mean kid. I think that a guy like Sam Mustafa is inherently a tough, mean kid. Same thing for McGlinchey. I think all those guys kind of have that in them. But I just don't see the collective of that in them. And, you know, it was interesting. I'd talk to offensive linemen in the past, and I'd say, well, you know, what happens when you get rolling like that? And they say, well, you know, we get into the huddle, and of course, you know, if you don't have a huddle, maybe that's part of the problem. But we get in the huddle, and it's just like, let's go. You know, we know that we're rolling them. And it's just kind of like you stare in that guy's eyes, and you see his eyes, and you're like, wow, okay, he's ready to go. I need to get my game up and ready to go. And because you don't have that huddle, maybe that's somewhat why some of that is lacking. But it's also an opportunity for the group to communicate and say, look, you know what, you got to kick this guy's ass. Why aren't you kicking his ass? You know, and so now what I want to see is as a group, as a unit, as a collective unit, there be an attitude that, you know, nobody's going to stop us. And they have physical ability. When you look at the guys that they have right now, McGlinchey, first-round draft pick, you know, Nelson, a first-round draft pick. Mustafa could be a solid NFL player. He's got good enough size, moves pretty well, pretty strong kid. So I like that. You know, and then the other side, Alex Bars has got big size, could be a really good player, especially as a guard. Shodi could be nasty at times in high school, some in college, but I think we need to see an uptick on that, and I think we'll see that this year. The second year after playing your first year, you usually are a much, much better player. So I think we'll see that. It's that other position, if it's Kramer, if it's Tristan Hodge playing guard, and they move Bars or keep Bars at right tackle, if it's, you know, one of those guys, and it's got to be a mentality. And I've been a little disappointed that I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things you'll be able to tell right away, just in those little stupid 3-on-3 drills that they do, just what is the compete level like? And I mean, a guy like Liam Eichenberg and Tommy Kramer, it should be pretty high because they're fighting for a job. So if they can come out and play with that mentality, then I think that'll go a long way too.
You know, Matt, I did the math just because I wanted to know before we did the show. And you know, Harry Hiestand is entering this spring practice right now with 10 4-star offensive linemen and 1 5-star offensive lineman on his roster right now. That's not adding, you know, some other guys that are coming in. That's just – those are the guys that he'll have for this spring. There should be no excuse. I mean, this line should absolutely be a dominant offensive line because you have starter experience with 4 of them. You have talent in 11 guys that have legit talent. And your starting 5 should be dominant. And if somebody goes down, you should have a quality answer. There's no excuse for it. And I'll be disappointed if I don't see that this season.
No, I agree. I mean, I thought the talent was there last year, but I mean, it just never clicked for whatever reason, whether it was the quarterback just not communicating the protections right or just Bars not having faith in his injury coming back. But, I mean, for whatever reason, it didn't click. And this is – I would imagine Hiestand's job is somewhat on the line just in terms of why isn't it living up to their potential. So either he's not recruiting the right guys or he's not developing the good guys to get to that elite status. So, I mean –
I think part of it's scheme, and that's why I'm excited about Long. I think if you're gonna go fast, that sets a mentality. Like if Josh Adams hits 7 yards on first down, well, boom, get up to the line. Let's hit it again. Let's hit it again, and let's hit it again until they stop. And that sets a mentality that you have. Where I think Notre Dame has struggled as an offensive line is you have a quarterback walks up to the line of scrimmage. He goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, and they're leaning heavy this way. I got to call the play and take it out this way. And, you know, and then we're snapping the ball with, you know, 1 second left to go on the play clock. Well, that's just a lot of standing around. That's a lot of guys standing around waiting to kind of, you know, figure out what they're going to do. And I think it makes you play passive. I really do. And I think if you're, you know, snapping the ball with 20 seconds left to go on the play clock, you're ready to go. And you know when you get done with that play, you got to get in a mindset ready to go because the ball is going to snap right away. I think it just clicks in your mind. And to be honest, I think that that's been a big problem with why we haven't seen the kind of dominance we should out of this group.
Yeah, I mean, I would actually love to see Notre Dame kind of do what Ohio State does with their tempo, where, like you said, they're kind of snapping it. They're running no huddle, kind of snapping around 20 seconds. But once they get into the red zone, then they turn to that sonic offense where they're snapping it as soon as they can, but it's just dive, 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 dive.
Yep.
And defense can't stop that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Notre Dame. It was a joke watching them try to stop it in the Fiesta Bowl a couple years ago. And Notre Dame has the backs to do it. They should have the line to do it. And obviously, Wimbush is more than capable of keeping the ball, too, at the same time.
Sure.
So, I mean, I think that's something that would kind of benefit Notre Dame in terms of establishing that mentality, playing with tempo, and then just making things simple. So I think that benefits everyone.
Do you think it's fair to expect a huge jump in offensive line play this year?
We'll see in 15 practices.
Yeah, well, I'm asking you now. I don't care about 15. I'm saying now. When you look at the talent on hand, I think it's fair.
It should. It just
when you look at talent and experience coming back, it should. Hell yes, it should.
I just want to see what they do with that right tackle position.
Well, and that certainly always is an issue, and it only takes one spot to break down. Everybody knows that. But you should be able to run behind the left guard and left tackle and center making his block. And if you got to put a tight end over there, that should be automatic 5 yards every time. It just should be. It should be. Those guys should be massive. They have plenty of experience. It shouldn't be a problem at all. And I'm going to be disappointed if I don't see it. So you mentioned the tackle spot, that right side. How do you think it's going to unfold when it's all said and done?
I think it's going to be a battle between Kramer and Eichenberg. But, I mean, what does that say?
At which position?
Right tackle.
Okay. So you expect Bars to move inside. Okay.
So what does that say about Bars playing outside last year?
Yeah.
If they're moving him inside this year for an inexperienced guy. But, I mean, I fully expect it to be Kramer or Eichenberg just because, I mean, those two are built for tackle. Kramer can play, obviously, guard too, but it'll kind of give Eichenberg a head start and his transition to left tackle if he can win it. And then, obviously, Kramer's going to end up at right tackle or right guard regardless.
It's going to be interesting because what you really need to do is you need to put you got to give Tristan Hodge a lot of reps because he'll be the guard. You know, whoever the other guard is coming in, it'll probably be him moving forward. I don't think you want to keep training, you know, Eichenberg and Kramer guard and tackle. I think you want to just let them focus on something. So it's going to be important that they give Tristan Hodge a lot of reps because if one of those guards goes down, he's the next guy in, and I expect him to be that guy. Same thing with center. You know, with Mustafer, if Mustafer goes out, you know, probably going to be Hodge unless Boudreaux, who knows.
I heard Boudreaux's been impressing so far. I know it's no contact, blah, 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 but I've heard that Boudreaux's definitely taken a hold of the center position and impressed the staff. So maybe that bumps Hodge out just to back up at right guard each time or at each position. So that's something to keep an eye on this spring is just who's the number two center.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't think they would feel totally comfortable if Mustafer went down throwing Boudreaux out there, but
they may have to.
Yeah. So it'll be something to watch.
Exactly. So that guard tackle on the right side is going to be interesting, but I think you're right. I think we'll see Bars move inside and then those two compete at that right tackle position. I think both of them certainly have the athleticism, you know, because they both could probably play left tackle. So I think they have the ability to do both. And, you know, it's just whichever one can be more domineering there in the run game. And
I have no concerns about the Ohio kids.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Here he goes. Here he goes. So if they screw up, I get to text you every week or every time.
You're gonna text me every week regardless.
That is very true. You're absolutely right. All right, well, let's flip to the defensive side of the ball. D-line, definitely my concern, and especially interior defensive line. I got a problem. I shouldn't say problem. I've got a big concern with it. We'll talk about that, but one way to solve that is Scott Pagano. I mean, if Scott Pagano ends up choosing Notre Dame, I can't even tell you how huge that would be for Notre Dame. I mean, it just – that could be the difference in two wins. It honestly could, I think, because he's going to be a fifth-year senior, man strength, right? He's 300 pounds. He can play nose. He could possibly switch to three technique if you needed him to. But just having that big body with that kind of strength, being around the kind of competition that he's had to play and compete with at Clemson, folks, I'm telling you, that's a huge get. Sounds like it went really well this weekend. They really impressed him. But Scott Pagano could be the difference in two wins for Notre Dame. I really believe that.
It's a bold statement, but in terms of production, I don't think he's going to be like a Jerron Jones stat sheet stuffer. But, I mean, just like you said, in the intangibles and his leadership and just bringing the other guys along, because, I mean, he's been there. I mean, he won a national title last fall. I think he can help out there. And then, obviously, he's a pretty solid player. So, I think he can hold down that middle if he does end up coming. But we'll see.
I don't think you're going to get, 50 tackles out of the guy. I don't see that happening. But what he can do is command that double team and hold strong in that double team. And if he can do that, that allows a guy like Tillery to use his quickness and that type of thing. With Cage, we don't know, can he handle the concussion situation? And then two, is he going to be consistent? With Pagano, we know he's going to be consistent because he's playing for an NFL check at this point, So we know he's going to be out there working his butt off. We know that he's gone against some very good competition. We also know the reason he isn't starting is because they got some amazing defensive linemen at Clemson. I don't blame the guy. He would have played a tremendous amount, but he wouldn't probably have started. And so he's got to go to a place where he's got a great shot to start. Notre Dame is certainly one of those opportunities. I think he knows that and realizes that. So I don't think he's going to be a 50-tackle, four-five-sack guy. But what he will do is he will shore up that middle, and he will make it difficult for guards to peel off and smack Notre Dame's linebackers. And that's his job. That's what they need him to do.
Plus, if he does come, then that allows you to likely redshirt Darnell Yule.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's just a plus that you don't have to throw a true freshman out there to the Wolves year one. So,
sure.
I think that may end up paying bigger dividends than anything he does on the field this year. Is allowing Yule and maybe even Hennish to develop more into their bodies and everything and not having them have to go through that struggle of playing before they're ready.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting too, because just having that extra body for those reps. So if Cage, say Cage starts out the year and he plays great for four games, but then the concussion situation just wears down and he can't deal with it. Well, then you're in trouble, because at that point, you've got who? Pete Mokwa.
Your boy.
And Mikadue Treadway, potentially. Those are the guys that you have at that point. And that's a little bit scary when you think about it. And I don't think that, Mokwa or Due Treadway are bad players. I just think that, Due Treadway hasn't practiced because he's been hurt. Elijah Taylor isn't going to play nose. He's not big enough. Never will be. You can't put John Bonner in there because, again, he's not big enough. He won't be able to handle the pounding. So Pagano is huge because we just don't know what's going to happen with Daniel Cage, and we don't know what's going to happen with Mikadue Treadway because he hasn't practiced enough, or Pete Mokwa. So that's going to be very, very important. Brandon Tiasom, I guess, is also in the mix there too. So they have bodies, they have guys. It's just, they don't have a lot of productivity, and there's none of those guys. I'm just being honest. There's not one of those guys that I look at and I say, that's an effort player. I don't see one right now. Now, I think Due Treadway can be. We've watched it in spring, and in fall where, he'll give considerable and consistent effort. Just a little bit green, needed to be taught and what to do.
I mean, he was showing a few flashes last fall camp, saying, or we were just like, wow, he could definitely play. And yeah. then he broke his foot. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He looked like he was a guy who was like, all right, he was ready to step up and at least be a solid contributing backup. And so we're hoping that he'll be ready for more of a bigger role this year. I just don't know. You know, like I said, but besides that, I just don't see an effort guy in there. And that's just such a big part of playing interior defensive line. It's about, you know, being tough and being consistent and being physical at all times. So that's a big concern for me.
They just don't have a Jamie Uyama inside.
Exactly.
What's they're missing?
See, Uyama was consistent and great effort in fixing the toilet today. That was very, very important for him. So he had to, you know, just kick to the curb his responsibilities of power hour to take care of, you know, and step up and do the right thing.
Yeah. What a guy.
All right. So where does everyone else slot? You know, does Jay Hayes, is he now a three technique? Is he more of a strong side end? Where does John Bonner play? Where does Khalid Kareem play? I mean, to me, I think, you know, Jay Hayes could bounce inside maybe as on a third down type of thing. But I think he's more of a strong side end, and I think that Khalid Kareem and John Bonner probably fit that role as well. What are your thoughts?
You don't think Jay Hayes is a rush end?
Yeah, not right now, no.
I think it kind of depends on Andrew Trombetti, because I asked Oko where he saw Trombetti fitting in, and obviously he hasn't seen him practice at that point and stuff like that, but he wasn't committed to saying he was going to play the drop or the rush end position. So I was kind of thinking he might be moving this back to strong side. So if he does that, then that might allow for a Khalid Kareem or a John Bonner, or like you said, Jay Hayes, to bump inside the three tech. If that happens, which I don't know if that's going to happen, but just with Elko not being committed to saying he's going to stay at that rush end is kind of intriguing to me, just seeing where he might end up. But I think all eyes are going to be on Khalid Kareem this spring because, I mean, he's the guy with the most potential, biggest body.
Yeah.
Obviously, he only played 15 plays last year, and John Bonner and Jay Hayes have a little bit more experience than him, but I think you've kind of saw what you're going to get out of John Bonner, which is a solid player, but just not a playmaker.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Jay Hayes is still a wild card 3 years into this thing. So it's, I would just kind of keep your eye on Khalid Kareem at that strong side position to see if he can win that if he's not playing three technique.
It's going to be interesting to see what Trombetti looks like,
yeah,
you know, on Wednesday, because I think Trombetti, you know, they were trying in the last defense, I think they're trying to blow him up too much, and it took away some of his athleticism. I'd like to see Trombetti about 245,
yeah,
because I think that that's where he's effective. He's really only about 6'2".
Yeah.
And I think at 245, he's an effective player and can be more of a pass rush specialist at 245. It's just, who do you put out there on first and second down, you know? And is that Dalen Hayes? Is that Julian Aquara? You know, who is that? And maybe it is Trombetti. You know, maybe he's the guy that's playing that, you know, at 245 or 250. But I don't think 260, 265 is a good number for him. So it'll be interesting to see on the roster what they list him at, if they slimmed him down or if they beefed him up, because that'll certainly be your answer, I would think, yeah, as far as what that'll be. You know, I think you got to start with Khalid and Jay Hayes and Bonner. And they're your strong side ends at this point, and you just got to let them fight it out. Yeah, I think Jay Hayes has a lot of potential when he wants to play hard and wants to, you know, does the right thing. I think he has a lot of potential to be a very effective player. I think he may be a better three technique than a strong side defensive end, but with Tillery there, with Elijah Taylor there, you may not need him. But I could see Hayes maybe bouncing down inside on third down, and then you could put a combination of a Dalen Hayes, an Aquara, or a Trombetti on the other side. But somebody at that strong side end's got to step up. We know that we're going to get a lot of effort and a lot of solid play out of Bonner, but certainly nothing spectacular. I'm hoping that Khalid Kareem, you know, makes a big step up, because that's going to push Jay Hayes as well.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel bad for Jay Hayes just because he's gone through the injury and then fought through just his mental stuff personally and everything. And then when it comes to the football side, they've just kind of drug him around, position to position. And I mean, him playing Russian last year was a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not Russian.
Yeah.
So it'll just be interesting to see what he does with the clean slate.
Yeah. And I think you're right in the fact that he's bounced around, but I think he's bounced around by his own actions.
Yeah.
You know, he just hasn't been effective. They don't know where to play him. They don't know whether they can count on him. And so it's up to him to step up and do it. So we'll see what happens. Linebacker. Now, this is going to be another interesting situation. We know right now Niles Morgan's going to be a Mike backer. We think Tevon Coney will be a Buck. You know, where does guys like, Greer Martini, is he more of a Mike or is he a Buck? I think he'll probably bounce a little bit. Asmer Bilal probably be more of a Buck linebacker. Who am I forgetting? Kid from Indiana. Josh Barajas, yes. You know, it'll be interesting to see where he is. Is he a Mike? Is he a Buck? And then it's at that outside backer position. I don't see any of those guys being a very good position for, like, that Rover spot. I just don't
maybe
see
Bilal.
It. Yeah, at best.
Yeah.
So where do you go with that? Is it do you populate that with Tranquil and Spencer Perry and DJ Morgan? What do you do with that? Where does Jahmyr Jones land?
Yeah, all right. Jahmyr's the wild card because he could end up at what, five positions?
Yeah.
Watching where he kind of starts out this spring will be interesting. And then, I mean, do you take Drew Tranquil out of the strong safety position to play the Rover, which depletes your safety position even more? I know he wasn't the greatest strong safety, but he was more than adequate at doing that job. Because, if you take him out of the safety group, you're rolling the dice a little bit just in terms of depth there. Because, it's Jalen Elliott and who else? You're going to move Ashton White to safety, a kid that's never played, move into a new position. I think that's a risk, but I think it's one they may have to take. But in terms of who can move there, I think Spencer Perry is the most likely candidate out of the safety group to move there. And then I wouldn't be surprised, like you said, DJ Morgan moves there too. But, that's taking three safeties out of the safety group.
I make all three of those guys Rovers, and the reason why is you need somebody who's a good tackler and somebody who's very physical to play that Rover position. They have to, because you're a little undersized, so you're going to need to be physical. So I like Tranquil in that role. I think he's a really good player that way, and a smart player, and somebody who's very physically, minded. And I think Spencer Perry fits that role as well. DJ Morgan, I don't know as much about because we haven't seen. We saw Spencer more in the spring than we got to see in the fall. And so, I think that body-wise, both those guys really kind of fit that role very well. When you mentioned safety, they mentioned Jalen Elliott being strong side or, safety. And I think that that's what we'll see. And we'll see flip to the – or no, they're going to flip those. They're going to put Jalen Elliott at free and Studstill at strong. I like that. It's after that will be interesting. And I think you're going to have to move Ashton White. I think you're going to have to move Nick Coleman. Those guys are going to have to be back there because, Nico, good special teams player, just don't really see it, being there as a guy. And after that,
negative taking three safeties to Rover.
Well, I think you put DJ Morgan and make him more of a strong safety, but also the third Rover at this point, unless you see what happens with Jahmyr Jones. Obviously, he'll probably, would start there just to see whether he moves well enough to do that. And then, would probably move to more of a rush end if that's the case, or maybe one of the other backers. I'm excited to see what happens there. But here's the wild card. What does Sean Crawford do? Can he be an effective player? I know a lot of people say, well, he's a tough kid, and he certainly is, and he's a motivated kid. But look, if you've blown your knee and your ankle, I don't care how hard you work and how good your doctors are, Crawford's speed and quickness is what made him a great player. It certainly wasn't his size. If he doesn't have that speed and quickness, it's going to be difficult for him to be the same player he was. And I know he's had plenty of time to recover both. So the knee should be fine. The heel, you know, probably, I don't think they'll be throwing him out there going crazy with him in this spring. But, you know, he'll certainly get some reps. But where does he fit? I think he's more of a nickel than anything. What do you then do with Nick Watkins? That's the interesting thing for me. Because I think Nick Watkins could be a really fantastic safety. I just don't see him as a great corner. I don't think he turns well. I don't think he has fluid hips. I don't think he has great speed. So to me, those are kind of the things that we just don't know what to expect with Nick Watkins.
Yeah, I've heard that Sean Crawford is doing very, very well. I've heard Notre Dame is very pleased with him and where he's at right now. I don't think that he'll go through spring ball just to allow him that much more time to heal his Achilles and everything, and no need to throw him out there. But I've heard very, very positive things. But I do agree with you. I think Nick Watkins is kind of the wild card heading into the spring, just because you want to get Love, Pride, and Vaughn work too. Just because, I mean, they're still young players.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they still do need a fourth corner. So if maybe Nick Coleman stays at corner and then you move Nick Watkins to safety, that's something there. But, I mean, I think once he gets to fall camp, it'll be a little bit better just because you'll have Sean Crawford back. And then you'll have some freshman safeties. Isaiah Robertson is a name that we didn't talk about much.
I was just going to mention him.
He could actually be a Rover. I don't know if he'd play this year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he actually started off at Rover too.
Yeah.
Just because he's a long body.
Well, if nothing else, he could be certainly a strong safety candidate, and he'll be here this spring to compete and you know, work and see what he can do. So that'll be interesting to see, you know, where he plugs into it. There's no corner coming in here. So that's why I think it's a little bit of a gamble to move a Nick Watkins, because there is no freshman corner coming in here that you can throw out there. So right now, if you move Watkins, White, and Coleman, you only got four corners, and one of them's a guy who can't even run, you know? So
it's crazy.
You can't really do that.
Three safeties, move three corners.
Yeah. So I have a feeling Watkins will stay. He'll end up staying, and they'll run those four as their corners, you know, meaning Pride, Love, Vaughn, and Watkins. Those will be your four corners. And I would guess White and Coleman will move more to safety type situation. And then they got to hope that Isaiah Robertson's a guy that shows something. You've got Genmark Heath coming in, and a tremendous athlete, could be a very good player. Don't really want to rely on a true freshman as a...
Again?
but guess what? They've done it before, and it worked out okay. So you want to talk about a heck of an athlete? You know, that kid physically could do it. But when you look at Jalen Elliott and Studstill last year, they're just equally as athletic, and they still struggled. But I think it'll be a different defense, and that's going to help them a little bit in, you know, what they're going to do and how to make that all work. So, that defensive backfield is going to be interesting, but that whole Rover, you know, where does Jameer Jones line up? I think Tranquil is definitely going to be a Rover.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, do you move Perry? Do you move Morgan? You'll move one of them, I'm sure. And then, you know, I think Jameer Jones will start out, I would guess, at that Rover spot, and then see if he's athletic enough to play it. You know, maybe Asmar, but I doubt it. But we'll see, because, you know, you have Jonathan Jones, who will certainly probably be more of a Mike, but he could play, you know, Buck, I guess.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see. So the next thing is obviously special teams. You've got Polian coming in, and this is going to be interesting to see what happens with him. He's a guy who loves to focus on this stuff, obsessive about it. So, I mean, I don't know. You know the union situation probably better than anyone. Should we be concerned at this point with kickoffs and field goals?
I wouldn't be. I mean, just because, I mean, last year, obviously, he didn't have the best spring or fall camp, but, I mean, he was pretty accurate in game. So, I mean, I wouldn't read too much what he does into practice, because I've heard that he kind of just tinkers around a little bit in practice, trying new things out and stuff like that, which... is a plus minus thing depending how you look at it.
I'd say that's a minus, but go ahead.
I mean, he's been consistent in games, so I mean that's the only thing that really matters. In terms of,
will the injury be a problem?
I don't know.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah,
because I mean, from what I've heard, is he'll be back by July, regardless if he has to have surgery or not. So I don't expect him to miss any time. Obviously, he's not going to be kicking during that time if he has surgery. So that's not ideal. But I mean, for him, I just don't see it as a huge issue. I know they brought in Dorr for kickoffs, which if I'm Justin Yoon, I'm very pissed about that because there goes your NFL future right there. Because if you can't do kickoffs, then you're not playing in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I'm sure he's not happy about that. I'm sure he's going to do everything he can to win that job.
Yeah.
But
well, it may be in his best interest to not worry about it this year, get his leg healthy, and then compete for it next year, you know. Because that, to me, I think would be the ultimate thing to do. Because you're right, you're gonna have to show that you have the leg strong enough to do that in order to have a chance in the NFL. And I think he's got a strong enough leg.
Yeah.
He just, you know, I think they just kind of wore down. You know, probably.
I think it was a lot of coaching too.
Yeah.
Because I think there was a lot of miscommunications on what he was asked to do from one person versus what the head coach per se wanted things to be done. So an example would be maybe somebody told him to kick it out of the end zone and then somebody else told him to kick it 2 yards deep so that they could catch the return man around the 15-yard line.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you're hearing two different things, then you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And then that impacts what you're trying to do on the field.
Yeah. All right. Well, you know, Dorr is going to be interesting because he does have a pretty strong leg, but I don't think he's the guy that's going to be kicking him, you know, way out of the end zone. I think that it was a big pickup because they needed him.
Yep.
He's a tall guy, you know, so he should be able to generate some pretty good leg power, and he's a skinny kid. I mean, he's skinny. So if they could get some weight on him, maybe build up his strength a little bit, that would certainly help. But, you know, I think he's got a lot of potential as a kickoff guy. I haven't really not watched a lot of the field goal stuff, and to be honest with you, I mean, I wouldn't know what to look for if I did.
I've done some digging on Dorr. I think he has big leg. He can definitely handle kickoffs. I think it's just there were multiple people that I talked to that had a little bit concerns about his mental toughness because he didn't perform well at a couple camps last year when the quote-unquote pressure was on him.
Sure.
So that may be something to keep an eye on down the line. Maybe not so much next year if he's just doing kickoffs if he does that, but there were some people that were concerned with his mental capability in terms of just handling a high-pressure moment. So that would be one thing to work on, and I'm sure that the team will do that, give him some trash talk like they did Yoon his freshman year just to see if he could handle it. So that'll be something to watch in fall camp. And then obviously you have Tyler Newsome too that can do kickoffs. I mean, he's not accurate worth a crap, but he can kick the ball out of the end zone. So if worse comes to worse, they may just have to do that.
You mentioned Newsome, and I'd never seen a guy go from one extreme to another as bad as he did last year. And I don't know what the issue was there, but whatever it is, he's got to fix that because he's got NFL talent. He really does. Man, I've never seen a ball explode off a foot like his. It's crazy. But, man, he was the most inconsistent player, and I don't know. It had to be a mental situation, and they got to get that fixed.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen the whole media crew at practice while practice is going on stop, and everybody's just watching the punter.
Yeah,
I know. Like, while practice is going on. I mean, that's how good Tyler Newsome can be.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like you said, I think it was something kind of mental going on just because, I mean, he was very, very inconsistent.
Yeah, very surprising. All right, five players, Matt. We'll start with you. Five players that you think will make the most noise this spring.
Excluding Brandon Wimbush?
Well, no, you can put that Wimbush
put
in there.
Brandon Wimbush.
All right.
Michael Du Treadway. Gotta go with Drew Tranquil. Tommy Kramer. And Dexter Williams.
Oh, you got a couple of mine. I think you're right. Wimbush is going to be one of the guys for sure. But I'm not going to put him on there because it's obvious. I think Dex is going to be one of them. I really do. I think Drew Tranquil is going to be one of them. I think he's going to really surprise. I think you're going to see Julian Love really kind of take that next step. Very confident player, played very well down the stretch. I really liked what I saw from him. I think Alize Jones is going to impress a tremendous amount because I think it's important to him, and I think he's a little embarrassed by what happened to him. And you can tell he's just his attitude's a lot better. And there's certainly a tremendous amount of talent there. I really think that we'll see that and go from there. The next guy I'm going to guess, and the only reason I'm going to guess is because I think he's kind of on the hot seat, and that's Kevin Stepherson. This kid has all the potential in the world. I mean, he really does have – he could be a great player, but he has to get his situation figured out mentally. If he can do that, he can be a great player. But I think he's the kind of guy that's going to make a lot of noise in practice, but he needs to translate that from practice to game. And some guys can never do that. And I think it's a maturity thing. I think it's a mental toughness thing that, you know, a pressure thing, as you mentioned. You know, when the pressure's on, are you going to be a guy that steps up? And for Notre Dame's offense to be successful, I think that he really needs to be a guy that steps up. I think he'll have a really good spring, and then we'll just see whether that will propel him into doing the right things off the field, making sure that, you know, he's eligible, you know, academically, all that other stuff. And if he can do that, he can have one heck of a fall, because I think he's a very underrated talent with a lot of potential.
He had a heck of a fall last year for a true freshman. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just
he had moments where he was really good, and then he had moments where he was not.
Yeah.
And very inconsistent. And so that, I think, is going to be it. So to me, those are my guys. I mean, I think Wimbush is a given. But yeah.
Well, if you're going to take Wimbush off, then I'm just going to put Dalen Hayes on there.
All right. All right.
I mean, regardless of how well he does, everybody's going to be talking about him.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's true, too.
He's going to do impressive things.
Yeah.
And just not even one-on-one drills, just
I will say
defensive line drills.
I will say I was not impressed last year. You know, I thought he was a physical specimen, but I was just not impressed really at hardly too many times last year in his ability to generate a pass rush, be an effective player. I did think he fought and played hard, and I think he can be very effective against the run with a little more experience. But I just didn't see the explosiveness that I thought I would see, you know, as a pass rusher.
He looked better in fall camp than he did in games.
Yeah.
Fall camp, we saw him shoot through for that
huge
tackle for loss, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you never saw that again.
Yeah. All right. Your next question. One surprise player. What guy, you know, from the spring do you think is going to be a surprise player that really stands out?
Justin Union's going to walk out. No, I'm kidding. Surprise player. Got to go with Khalid Kareem. He's not really like a quote-unquote surprise player, but when you've only played 15 snaps in your career and you're fighting for a starting role, I think he has a chance to make that impression. And, I mean, that position is wide open, so he should come in and take it. I mean, there's no reason why he shouldn't be starting next year.
I'm saying this because probably I want it more than anything, but for me, I'm hoping it's Julian Okwara because I think he's got the most potential as a pass rush specialist. I think Jameer Jones is another that I would like to see being that guy. But I really think it's amazing how much a great pass rush can solve a lot of problems you have. And so I'm really hoping that it's Julian Okwara. So I'm going to pick him. Last question, which new coach do you think will impress the media the most out there on the field?
Oko.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, he's too impressive in the media one-on-one setting to not be impressive on the field. Because, I mean, I think his coaching style is going to be the complete opposite of Van Gorder, and I think that's what these kids need the most.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not somebody jumping down their throat all the time. And him and Clark Lee have said that they built their philosophies and their coaching style based off of being more positive versus just tearing a kid down. So, I mean, I think he'll get after kids, but I don't think he'll just completely embarrass them in front of everyone like Van Gorder did.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's sometimes needed, but, I mean, just every day, I just think that wears on a kid.
I think so, too. If it, you know, I think you got to know who to do that to and when. You got to pick your spots.
Yeah.
After a while, if you're just yelling, you know, it's just going to be completely shut out.
We heard Van Gorder yell at the same five kids every time we've been at practice. And he never yelled at other kids. Yeah. So
well, and they never got any better either. Yeah. You know, so so obviously it wasn't very effective.
Now Harry yells at everyone. So
there's nobody sacred for Harry. So for me, and again, this is probably more wishful thinking, but I'm hoping it's Chip Long, and the reason why is because I want to be wowed by what they're doing offensively, and I want to be wowed by Chip Long telling Brian Kelly, look, we need to run the ball more. We need to focus more on the running game. And we need more, you know, periods where we're focusing on it, where we're being competitive, where we're doing competitive things. And so that's what I'm hoping that we see. And I'm hoping that it is Chip Long. But I think you're probably right. It'll be Elko in the end. But I'm praying that it is Chip Long because that'll allow, you know, that'll say, Brian Kelly said, green light, you run this thing, you do it. And I don't think Brian Kelly's a bad offensive coordinator or offensive mind. But I think what Chip Long wants to do, I think, is the right thing for this group of players, the right thing for this offensive line. And I think that I've never liked the amount of time that Notre Dame has spent working on running the football in practice under Brian Kelly. I just have not liked it. And I think that that's why they're not as effective, you know. And so to me, that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of surprising because Brian Kelly actually built his resume off of a good running game. So it'll be kind of – his moves have kind of been catered towards him getting back to the old Brian Kelly days. So like you said, it'll be more interesting to see how those practices are conducted at this point versus anything.
All right, folks, that's going to be it. I hope you enjoyed that. Once again, remember, we're running our special 1999 from now till August. So go to the front page of Irish Sports Daily. You can sign up there. We will be at, we think, a press conference tomorrow at noon, and hopefully we'll have some good coverage of that. And then, of course, spring practice starting on Wednesday. I think it starts at 7:30 in the morning. And so we'll have a lot of stuff coming up shortly. Around 9:30, I suppose, we'll start to have stuff trickle out from practice on Wednesday. So hope you enjoyed that. Once again, if you like it, please share it with other Notre Dame fans, friends, former roommates, you know, whatever. We appreciate any sort of help you can get us in spreading the word on Power Hour. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
This has been Power Hour, an exclusive production of IrishSportsDaily.com. Don't wait. Sign up now for a premium subscription for IrishSportsDaily.com for year-round recruiting news and Notre Dame coverage. For more on the Fighting Irish, visit IrishSportsDaily.com now. And to listen to archived Power Hour podcasts, visit iTunes.
That's a good one.
Power Hour, exclusively on IrishSportsDaily.com.